Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Today in our virtual studios, I've got Aditya Tulli, or AD as he likes to call himself. Aditya, you've been involved in the innovation field for many years under different guises, different organizations. You've taught, you have gotten various teams, sometimes at scale, involved in innovation and creating organizations that are more agile. And now with the Simon Darby Plantation, which we're going to talk about as an organization as part of the podcast. Aditya, welcome to our podcast series. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Sarath. Thank you for having me, first of all. A real pleasure. Okay, a little bit about myself. I've been in technology for over two decades now. Well, first of all, I should say that I'm very much a global citizen. I actually was born up in India and lived in India, and that's where I did my undergraduate computer science in India. And then eventually found myself in the UK, where I then became a citizen, and then I have been in Malaysia for the last 8 years. But I've been in technology for over a couple of decades already. And if I think about my career looking back now, then I would think everything sort of connects very well. You know, everything seems like a straight line, but I can tell you it wasn't like that. I've had very fortunate accidents in many ways to be where I am today. But largely for your viewers, you know, I started my career as a programmer, gravitated towards product management at some point. And that was one of the reasons I moved to the UK. Got very much interested in what allows organizations, or I should say people within organizations, to adopt technology. And that was part of my thesis as well in during my MBA year. And then, you know, sort of technology changed, especially over the last decade and a half. You know, there have been so many changes in technology, and I was part of that wave in some ways, starting with open source, getting into cloud and mobile and analytics, and then getting interested in startup and entrepreneurship, which is really picking up here in Southeast Asia, to eventually where I am today as part of digital, which I think the way I see it is a combination of all those things, you know, technology, business, and the entrepreneurial flair, if you like, or the innovation flair, if you like. So yeah, very fortunate to be where I am.
That's fantastic. You know, when we talk about digital transformation, when we talk about the digitization of industries, one of the things that comes to mind for me is an event we were part of at a major U.S. university a couple of months back. And one of the things that really struck me during that discussion, we had a whole host of experts from various industries around the table, and we realized this is something that's been confirmed by our own research and work with clients, is how much the work of innovation is not always what it seems, where we see it in a very particular light, particularly in traditional industries, infrastructure, agriculture, food production, energy, a whole host of industries which seem traditional, which seem steeped in the kind of that traditional R&D process, which then turned into innovation. In fact, a lot of our assumptions around how we innovate have changed, and therefore it is not just up to large organizations with big CapEx programs and lots of resources that are able to innovate sustainably in those environments. We're finding challenger organizations, we're finding much smaller firms, we're finding collaborations, very interesting collaborations in those industries. So when we started our conversations around innovation in these industries, I got a sense that you've seen something similar in your own work. And I want you to talk to us a little bit about innovation in industries where you don't think of first, but which are different and very often steeped in traditions and practices.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing we've got to realize here, firstly, is there is no normal, so to say. And I think COVID, people have been talking, especially around COVID, about the new normal. The reality is that there is nothing normal, and there probably hasn't been for some time. And organizations like ours, or industries in agri and a few other industries that I can think of, generally haven't invested so much in technology or modernization of technology over the years, right? So generally, large organizations like ours in agriculture have been playing catch up over the years. And I can think of COVID as one of the real turning points over here, at least the way I've witnessed things, where suddenly the reason to innovate has become much stronger than it was ever in the past. You know, everyone talks about innovation. I think there's been a lot of talk going around it, but sometimes it's used as a buzzword. And I've only really started seeing changes in the last 3 or 4 years as the challenges have become more and more difficult. So, for example, in agriculture, culture, there's always been a reliance on foreign labor, on workers that come from different countries. And this happens across the globe. This is not just in Southeast Asia. It happens back in Europe and every, in the States as well. And with borders closed and with the restrictions that COVID brought in, we suddenly don't have these foreign workers with us. And you've got to think very differently. So really forced to change, but the problem becomes a lot more clear when you have this kind of crisis. And if I talk about food, I mean, similarly, I think there are lots of opportunities you suddenly become very aware of as you go into a crisis. So with food, we realize that we've got to think very differently about food security going forward. And that, again, for an organization like us is very interesting because we are a big player in food, in the food space as well. So there have been, I guess, a number of opportunities that have only become clear with COVID. Now, technology is never the problem, right? I mean, when it comes to innovation as well, it's not necessarily about the technology. I think the technology is moving at its own pace. Where the challenge always has been is whether people in the organization are willing to change. And I think that needs a very different catalyst or a very different sort of an event to happen for that to occur. And I think that's only becoming, like I said, again, very clear in the last few years. So innovation in agriculture, just to give a context for your listeners as well, I mean, agriculture traditionally seen as one of the last few industries to really pick up. I think there was a research by McKinsey done in 2016, where you'd imagine all the media companies and the financial institutions and somebody else, everybody else, really on the bandwagon of digital and innovation for many years, but agriculture was one of the most lagging industries. But then that also means that there's great opportunity for us to innovate, and there's an opportunity for us to leapfrog, essentially. And I think that's what, at least at Sime, the plantation, we are looking to do. So, yeah, I mean, I think you've got to look at not just the, I guess, the front end of innovation, which everyone loves to talk about, but I think we should also think about the back end of innovation. You know, as we go along in this discussion, we can talk a little bit about that as well. But I think that's where the challenge is. Generally, you have a crisis coming along that just speeds things up or helps accelerate.
You know, it reminds me of a podcast conversation we've had recently with one of our associates where he said, similar to your point around technology never being the problem, his point was, you know, we've been in the midst of digital transformation since the very beginning, since computing started. Yeah. What's changed is not just the speed and the scale of it, but the fact that no one has the answer at the moment. The technology is generally available, not utterly ubiquitous. What's changed is the fact that because we don't have the answer, we have to organize ourselves differently. We have to bring together different parties who don't take on those traditional roles, the funder, the, you know, the person who provides the oversight of innovation efforts, the person who creates or decides on the strategic direction. We have to figure this out as we go along. The, you know, the potential for innovation, the areas in the business in which it can now be applied, where in the past, perhaps to your earlier point, we may have not looked there. It wasn't the first place to look. It wasn't the kind of the upfront or the front, more kind of attractive or glimmery part of the innovation process. We're now looking at the back end. And that kind of got me to think about, when we think about the agricultural sector, what are the things that in your mind have really triggered this understanding that innovation actually matters, that it does play a role, that it's not someone else's business, it's all of our business. And there is no manual that one can protest to and say, I've got the answer, just follow me. Well, what has been some of those driving forces in what you've seen?
Yeah, I think very rightly, we don't know a number of things. And I think that's the right starting point. And that just means that we've got to explore a lot more. And we've got to admit that we don't know everything. And so we've got to partner a lot more. Now, in agriculture, I think the focus for many, many years has been on efficiency, largely. And one of the challenges over there was basically the variations we have in our operations. So if you're a large player, especially like Sime W Plantation, that has operations, you're in Malaysia and in Indonesia and Papua New Guinea, and then you have palm, which is growing in different types of terrains. And obviously each of these countries have their own climate and weather patterns and whatnot. And on top of that, you have climate change. You have so many variables that you no longer understand and no longer can control. But the focus has always been, or had always been, on controlling your cost. There are things that you can control. And so you're largely trying to find efficiency, and you do that through data, largely. And what has changed in the last few years is very much we've realized that there are so many other things going forward that will be beyond our control. Labor will be beyond our control. Trade and international trade is something that impacts our business as well. That's beyond our control, apart from climate. And of course, climate is getting trickier as the question is as well going forward. So there are a number of other variables that come into play, and I think there's no escaping. We've got to now search for solutions that go beyond cost efficiency. We've got to really think very differently in terms of not just survival, but is there also some opportunity by being the size that we are and being in the spaces, geographies that we are? Is there an opportunity in the business that we need to tap into? And this just means that we've got to open our mindset, or we've got to be open in very different ways to think about these opportunities. My own personal learning with digital from day one, you know, I joined Time Value Plantation back in 2019, so it's about 3 years. I always found it challenging to go to the business and say, you've got to do digital or you've got to innovate because there's a threat to the business. You know, I've talked a lot about the threats, but it's a very different, a very difficult story to sell. I've always tried to go with the opportunity angle, and I've always said there are multiple opportunities to tap into. We've got to be really prepared for the future. And I think, you know, I was again a bit fortunate that, you know, as I joined this organization, COVID hit us and suddenly everyone was asking the question, well, okay, what do we do next? And how do we come out of this? And how, what sort of a business should we be in 10 years? And I think those are the conversations I find myself a part of now in Time Value Plantation. And that just means that at least at the leadership level and maybe a couple of levels below that, it's much easier to talk about innovation, much easier to talk about new spaces, much easier to talk about different partners and ecosystems and so forth. Whereas in the past, it would have been, you know, not so easy. So, you know, to simply put it, you know, there wouldn't have been so much of looking around or looking outside. And today that is very much norm. So the things have changed definitely.
Now, Aditya, when we get to that point where it's safe to talk about innovation, it's safe for people whose innovation is not in their job profile, is not part of their case. They're not incentivized for it as yet. They may be personally excited about it or about the prospect of being involved, but it's not part of the DNA of the organization as yet, and certainly not in their part of the business. But now you have them curious. You have them possibly even excited. You have them starting to think about what's beyond, in with more of an opportunity mindset than driving fear into them. What do you do next? What are some of the ways in which they can now contribute in doing, not only in kind of stepping or acknowledging that they might be part of a solution? How do they practically get involved in innovation? Can you give us an example or two?
Yeah, I mean, we've been running innovation as a culture or a cultural change for a few years now, Sar. And we've done all of that work on the ground, as in we've run those workshops that expose people to design thinking, as an example, or expose people to how do you use sprints, perhaps, to sort of get to a solution and how you could do these things in days as opposed to weeks and months. But there's only so much of what you can do culturally speaking. And what we found is that people do need a challenge or an opportunity area where they can really focus on. So again, going back to the example of labor, when we had a shortage of labor, this was a problem that was being discussed at the highest levels. There was no hiding about it. It was made transparent by our group managing director. It was discussed at various forums. Everyone in the organization knew that was the biggest challenge we were facing. And consequently, they were given the freedom, I suppose, to come up with solutions. Now, we already had the mechanisms where they could propose these ideas, and they could do all of that other stuff, you know, form teams and whatever else. But the fact that the highest level in the organization down to the lowest level is now aligned to what the biggest challenge is in a big part of our business was clearly the difference. And I think that just meant that suddenly you had people coming together on their own in very remote areas sometimes without the need for a innovation officer or digital officer or strategy officer getting involved or the innovation team helping them. And they were able to debate the problem. They were able to come up with a few solutions. They came up with mechanized solutions in our case of how we can actually turn some of the very manual activities to mechanized solutions. And all you need is then to sort of, you know, have the right channels where you take these ideas to. In our case, all of that was already set up. So we had our review panels and our you know, key leadership sitting on those review panels and so forth. And you just need the support from leadership to say, go ahead, experiment. And that's what we've been doing. We've been experimenting. And I must say it has been largely successful. A number of those machines that were designed by operators on the ground by themselves today are actually going beyond prototype and being commercialized. So it has gone beyond simply running workshop and capturing ideas. And it has reached the stage where we are now commercializing some of these solutions. And I think largely it has been about people understanding the challenge that is in front of us and aligning on that. I think the other role, and I say this a little bit from my own personal experience, is one of the things when I came in, one of the things that I felt almost compelled to do was to come up with solutions very quickly, yeah, because I was new in the organization. And anyone who takes up a new role would know this, that different sort of a pressure in the first 100 days to sort of prove it. And I would say that actually, you know, over the years, I've realized that perhaps that was the wrong thing to do, or at least not the only thing I should be doing. One of the other things I need to do is really understand people in the organization, because ultimately, business is about people. Innovation is about people as well. The more you understand what people really need and what are the problems that they're facing, the better you are in terms of addressing or helping them. If they see you as a threat, then obviously things don't work out, right? And I say this because that is the other part. In our organization, we suddenly had people who were reaching out to other people just to understand what was happening in their part of the world. And they were able to connect these dots and they were able to work together. And I think that plays a large part in innovation as well. So it's not just about sort of the technology, but it's also then people coming together to know what needs to be solved and being able to work together. I think that was very critical for us. So yeah, there's been a lot of cultural stuff, but alongside there has also been a lot of, you know, sort of people now taking up the challenge themselves and coming up with solutions.
One of the things that we've spoken about previously, and you've raised it at the beginning of our conversation today, was the role of leadership, and particularly the mindset of leadership. Because leaders in context of scaling innovation are there to create more than just sense making. They're there more than just to contextualize the current situation. That is something that leaders do on an ongoing basis. What you've spoken about is giving people a sense of purpose, giving people a longer term ambition to aim towards, and therefore there's greater meaning to what they do. They're not just solving an immediate problem for the here and now. They are fundamentally transforming the organization for something that is better, for something that will last. And that's where more individuals, talking about scale, and even at a deeper level as individuals, they connect to a bigger purpose. Talk to us a little bit about the journey of a leader as they are involved and start to shape, give direction, and support innovation efforts. What is their role and how does their mindset impact their ability to affect change in the organization?
Yeah, I can talk about a little bit about my own journey, I think. Maybe that's the right way to answer this. You know, it has to start with awareness. And I think, you know, you clearly mentioned the sense making. But I think it also starts with an awareness of where do I really want to take this organization to. So it starts with a vision. It starts with a purpose, clarifying that, making sure everyone understands that. And then sort of working with or setting up teams, essentially smaller teams around yourself, to address some of the critical challenges, because you won't be able to do this across the organization or from the get-go, right? We won't be able to sort of get everyone believing in it and talking about it in the same way. But you've got to start somewhere. So you start with your most critical challenges and set up the right teams to address your most critical challenges. And what's happening through this process is I guess we are trying to figure out how do we structure, how do we organize ourselves better if we were to scale this now, right? Because you can't really change the organization in a night. You know, you've got to understand the journey. You've got to understand that people have, or they are being measured by performances that have already been set. Or they have goals that have already been set. So you can't really do this sort of overnight, and you've got to really be on a journey yourself. So I think from a leader's mindset, it's very important to A, be very self-aware of what you bring to the organization. I think sometimes that is underestimated. I think every leader has a vision and an agenda, and I think that plays a very big role. But then so is, how do I now start enabling the organization? How do I unlock within the organization from its current structure to start addressing some of the key challenges first before I start thinking of scale? How do I go from being sort of not understanding maybe all the technology myself to be on a journey to learn this stuff up and be creative specific committees to do that as well, by the way. So, you know, it has been a learning journey for us. We didn't know all of these things when we started. Robotics is a good example, right? Let me give you one particular example. When we wanted to look at solutions for a labor, we realized that there were so many things that we didn't know. We didn't know where to actually search for the solutions. We knew robotics was coming of age. We knew technology was there, at least the pieces were there. But how do we make it happen in agriculture? How do we make field robotics happen? And I think that's extremely challenging even today. And so we just had to be patient on the one hand, but also realize that we had to learn quite a lot in that space. So we set up a special team that was purely on a learning journey for months and months before we started sort of making our first few moves. So we had to be a bit persistent here. But that cadence, the leadership availability and the leadership persistence around it was important. And I think this is where I think it's very important the leaders also have a very learning mindset, a very open mindset, as opposed to saying, well, you know, let's sort of get cracking and do what we already know. I think you've got to start from the viewpoint that you don't know. and you've got to now go from an organization that always believed that it knew what it was doing to now being an organization that doesn't know what it's doing. You know, and it's difficult to do, right? I mean, for an organization like Sime W Plantation, 200 years old, we have procedures and operating processes that have been perfected over many, many, many years. And to go from that sort of position where you feel like you know everything to now saying, well, actually, I don't, and I've got to learn these things. I think that is critical. And for us, that is what leadership had to do. You know, we had to put on that learning hat, and we had to each on our own also had to address what is it that we want to bring to the future of Sime W Plantation. You know, being very aware of, you know, who we are, essentially. And I think for me, that's been a journey as well. So it's not just been a change in the organization. I think as a leader, you realize there has to be a step change in the way you approach things as well as a leader. And that's been one of the learnings that I've had over the last 2 or 3 years, as well as a very satisfying journey, I must admit, yeah, because this is now exposing me to things that previously I just left it to my subconscious.
No, 100%. You know, it kind of reminds me one of the questions we often pose to leadership teams as they make that change, as they become more comfortable being in a learning mindset, is we ask them a question about partners and how willing do they think their partners, and there are a few that are already on the board, that are a few that are kind of that they can start to latch onto and attach to opportunity areas. And we ask them, you know, to what degree do you think these partners are willing to partner with you? And how will you know? What would be the signal that will tell you that they're willing to do it differently? And I often find that that's where we underestimate the degree to which others are willing to partner with us. We underestimate the degree to which others put faith and trust in us, whether it's within the organization, we just didn't notice, we were too busy, or outside of the organizations, customers, business partners, sometimes technology partners. And I kind of wonder when you got to that stage where suddenly you feel robotics wasn't just a crazy idea. There were prototypes in the field being tested. You started thinking about, well, what difference would it make to our customers? What difference would it make to our communities, to our workforce, to the way we operate as an organization? What sense did you get of their responses, the stakeholder response to it, beyond the immediate team, beyond the innovation team, beyond the immediate leader who's in charge of them and has been giving them space to experiment? Well, what's been the response with broader stakeholders?
Yeah, I think for the people outside the innovation team, obviously there is still the journey that they've got to adopt this technology. Yeah? Adopting of technology is a completely different challenge on its own. So for example, introducing robotics suddenly means that my job scope will be very different. In fact, I may not be doing the same things that I'm doing today because, you know, I might be manually spraying certain herbicides, but tomorrow this could be done with drones. And what does that really mean for me in the organization? And so at that level, there has been a lot of work to train people up to now become a different sort of a role or play a very different sort of a role in the organization. So you would have people who are doing manual jobs to now they're being trained on how do you run machines or how do you actually operate robots and so forth, or how do you actually operate drones in the field. So there's been a lot of training. There has been a change in the job description. We've tried to actually modernize, or I should say, better reflect in the job title itself what people are doing. There's been a change in salary structures that continues even today. Even today, we are having organization discussions around, you know, how should we fairly compensate people? Because machines do change the job, one hand, but on the other hand, they do lead to productivity gains. And I think people should be rewarded for that. So beyond the innovation team, there's been a lot of practical talk about all of that on the ground. Now, in terms of partners, I think you're quite right. When we opened up the challenge to, you know, globally, we said, okay, fine, we've got to first of all look for solutions within. We've got platforms to do that, and R&D team, and digital team, and innovation team, and various other teams, including the upstream operations team, for example, in robotics, would be involved in these things. But what about globally? And so we opened up innovation challenges globally, and what we found was a number of partners were willing to talk to Simon W. Plantation. Now, they may not know enough about palm oil itself, but they felt like they had a piece of the technology which would be interest to us. And one of the challenges we've had over there is how do we take those technologies, how do we stitch them up, how do we actually make them ready for commercial? I think that's been one of our challenges over the last 12 to 18 months, because that learning is something that only the business has. And so we've got to work very closely with our partners now, almost in a co-development mode, to really bring these solutions to commercialization, essentially. So there has been learning on both ends. One, at our end, how do we partner with people and what the right structure we want to partner with? Do we really want to buy technology? Do we want to actually invest in startups? Do we really want to sort of have something just operated as a service for us and so forth? And on the partner end, I think there has been equally a learning for them as well, I think, in terms of what does it mean now as a potential technology startup, for example, to work with a large organization? How do I take a prototype into commercialization? And I think a lot of our startups have appreciated that journey, yeah? Because I can think back to early days when some of these partners came to us, they were so optimistic about finding solutions. You know, you would hear them say in their pitches that they could actually find a solution within 6 months. And we realized that that's simply not possible. And now we are much better prepared, and so are the startups, to actually realize that this is a journey. This is no longer about a contract that exists between them and us. We are on a journey together, and both of us are looking to actually co-create this solutions. So there has been that shift as well, and a lot of learning in that partnership space, and equally a lot of learning for us, because we've got to really think about what is it that we bring to startups. You know, what is the opportunity that will entice them? Or what is the culture that we should have that it makes it feasible for them to co-work with us? Those are difficult questions to answer. So we have been on a journey as well.
That's fantastic. Aditya, maybe just a last question from my side. You know, what will be your advice when you speak to innovation leaders, when you speak to teams who are kind of on the onset of the journey and looking forward, you know, when you speak to startups who are trying to find a space in which they can grow, an opportune space, what is your advice to others who are trying to build this innovation ecosystem, who are trying to make a difference and to contribute? What would be your advice to them?
Well, I think number one, be open and transparent, right? It always starts with that. So if you feel like you've got something to hide or you want to protect something, this applies both to the enterprise, the larger organization, as well as the startup, then clearly you're starting on a wrong foot. So you've got to be very open from the get-go that you only know what you know, and you've got to partner here, and you're looking for an equal partnership, you know, as I said, co-development to build those solutions. So I think it starts with that. Be very open to do that, because if you are not, then clearly you're going to be limited in the kind of solutions that you will find. Understand the role of storytelling. I think that is very important. You know, we talked about purpose a little bit. Now, purpose is something that you've got to repeat every day, and you've got to perfect it over a period of time as well. It's not something that you will hit upon again overnight and you'll have it right the next day. We've looked at how leadership should behave within the organization. And personally for me, I've also been very aware of what my own storytelling style is and how do I really work with people on a personal basis. I think that's very important. So, you know, whilst we want to scale it, you know, you can't really achieve that scale, like I said, on a daily, in a day. You've got to really think about how do you start small, but then how do you bring more and more people onto your side? How do you convince them? And that is through continuous storytelling. Yeah, that plays a very important role. The schematics of innovation, yeah, how do you want to be sort of what processes you want to run, you know, whether you want to do design thinking workshops or scrums and sprints, and how do you join these things up, and, you know, where does agile come in, and all of that is part of doing innovation. And I think doing innovation is the easier path. but it is really prepping yourself for that, I think, is important. So anyone new in the role, I would say, you know, especially if you're an innovation manager or an innovation lead in your organization, take some time out to really understand people in the organization. These are people who are going to adopt solutions. These are people who will operate the new technology that you're potentially looking to bring in. And the more you understand them, the better you will be, or the more effective your solutions will be. Yeah, so that's very important. Be open on sharing your challenges. Be very open and honest and transparent about the most critical challenges, you know, you are facing and your industry is facing, because that might be something that your partners will find very appealing. That sort of vulnerability to some extent is very much important as well. And be willing to co-create here, because you are not going to do this on your own. So you've got to create that ecosystem slowly, and that ecosystem will be startups, there'll be government agencies, there'll be large technology providers, there'll be people within the organization, teams within the organization, and so forth. You know, you're always looking at what your ecosystem portfolio in a way looks like as well. Yeah, what your ecosystem map looks like as a way. In a way as well. And you're looking at how do you actually grow that. And that's something that, again, we haven't perfected this. I can't really say that we have metrics around it, but it's very important, and we realize that it's very important for innovating in an organization like that.
Aditya, it's been an absolute pleasure. Great insights and wonderful to see both your work and others in the organization. I'm sure we could speak a lot more about these field robotics and this whole area. And I'm sure at some point we'll invite you back into our virtual studio. But thank you for today, for making time for us. Thank you for sharing with us your journey into innovation and the kind of work that you are enlisting others in.
Thanks, Sal. Thanks for having me. I must say I've enjoyed the conversation as well. Yes, there's a lot to uncover. I mean, these topics are not that easy. You know, everyone's on a journey, but persistence is important. Clarity is important. So I hope I've been slightly helpful to your listeners as well, and look forward to other conversations in the future. Thank you.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.